Welcome to this week's episode of The World According to Craig with my good friend, Justin Newman, who's here to talk to us about what it's like to be Justin Newman, which I find to be an amazing thing. So thank you so much, Justin.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to discuss what being Justin Newman is like.
I mean, I am a firm believer that everybody has a story, and not just a story that's interesting, but a story that we can learn from.
Absolutely.
And I've learned so many things from you. So we'll talk a lot about what it means to what we're going to talk about today and find your passion and develop who you are. But before we talk about who you are now, I would love for people to get to know and how that journey went. I'd love for people to get to know you a little bit. Like, so you are, although we live in Los Angeles, you are not a native Angelina.
No, not at all.
Which is good, because native Angelinos can sometimes go a little sideways. No, I'm kidding, kidding.
No, I have the same thought sometimes. Nothing against native Angelinos. They're a different breed.
They're a different breed.
Yeah.
Growing up here makes you a completely different person. I love Los Angeles, though, and my children will be native Angelinos, so I guess I'm in for it.
But their influence is from you, who, you know, you're from Midwest originally. Right?
Yes, so, as are you. Yeah. So we are good Midwestern boys at heart.
Oh, we try to be.
Depends, yes. So you grew up in Chicago.
Yes, so I grew up, well, Chicago, but it's the Chicago area, so...
Okay. Which is like a little like saying somewhere between Detroit and Des Moines.
Yeah, basically. Exactly. Like there's a few hundred miles between us, but I was born like right outside of Chicago in the suburbs. We lived there, you know, we lived in the burbs for a bit, and then we just crossed the border over to Indiana. So I am from Chicago. I'm from the Chicago area, but Northwest Indiana is where I call home.
We're even closer to each other. Yeah. Me having, as you know, we both grew up in Indiana, although very different Indianas.
Yeah.
Mine had a lot more corn.
I am familiar with yours too, because you know I went to school downstate.
So, yes.
Yeah.
It's funny we never ran into each other considering how small Indiana is.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I know you as this incredible tour de force of personality. Like in our group of friends, in full disclosure, we're friends. I say we're friends. Mm-hmm. I hope that you would
absolutely
agree.
Yeah.
I know you as this tour de force personality who knows every Beyonce song and every lyric and every choreography move, and
I will neither confirm nor deny. Yes.
And you're also incredibly smart. And not that people who don't know Beyonce song, but like absolutely. You have these insights about the world and the way people operate, and you use that in your work both as an actor and a digital marketing strategist. Absolutely. You're like this fully developed and yet baked and yet developing personality all in one.
Yeah. I am baked, but I sometimes I need to go back in the oven, you know?
Right. So, yeah, just a little sometimes. Refresh. But like, I guess what I really wanted to talk about today is, you know, as we've gotten to know each other, I've gotten to know that you shared that wasn't always you. Like, and I think we get a lot of conversation in the world about from influencers with millions of followers about like, this is what this is like, and this is Motivational Monday. And that can feel sometimes very unrelatable to people.
Yeah,
and disingenuous. Absolutely. Like, it's like, girl, you have 18 million followers. Yeah. I'm sure comparatively you've had rough times in your life, but that, do you really understand me? Right? Like, do you know, like that vein, but you're somebody that people that I think would relate to, which is why I asked you to be on, because I feel like it's this everyday amazingness. Mm-hmm. So, but like, what was it like growing up? Like, what were you like growing up?
I was not what you see right now, definitely. Growing up, especially when I was a smaller child, I was a little bit more shy. And like, I was a lot less confident than I am right now. You know, I grew up, like I said, I grew up in the Chicago suburbs in Northwest Indiana, which is, Indiana is a state, I don't know if people pay attention, you know, but it's not
Mike Pence.
It's not the best state to grow up in as, you know, especially like as a young Black child, for me at least. Northwest Indiana it's a little bit more of a diverse population than the rest of the state. But it's still a lot. It's still a lot for someone that is a minority, someone that can't really assimilate fully to the Indiana, Northwest Indiana, that Midwest culture is really, really difficult. I was a little bit less confident because of that, because I was being molded and shaped by views and points of view that were not very conducive to who I was growing up. You know, like I needed people to kind of cheer me on and tell me to embrace the things that were different, so to speak. And I didn't really get that, mostly because, you know, I grew up in a white neighborhood. It was a lot to go through.
Okay.
You know, I always say that my childhood wasn't bad. It wasn't terrible at all. But I think, you know, growing up in the environments that I grew up in, my mom, you know, my parents are, they weren't together, you know, then that's not a bad thing. You know, my parents are both great parents. They're just not great with each other. And
that's like the healthiest statement you could possibly say in that situation. Yeah, yeah. So I appreciate that.
And my dad, fully just a part of my life. But, you know, my mom, she had, I was primarily with my mom most of the time. So she, as a single Black woman in the Midwest, she did what she had to do. She's extremely hardworking, and she wanted to provide for me in the best way possible. And that meant like trying to, you know, go to the best schools and being the quote unquote best neighborhoods. But in turn, you know, that I had to go to, I ended up going to like a private school, and then I went to a public high school, which was a majority white. I think when I entered high school, there were maybe 15 Black people in the entire school.
Right.
I want to say, don't quote me on that, but you know, this is 2004 in Munster, Indiana. So,
Well, I mean, that's, I mean, having grown up in rural Indiana, I tell people, like, if you've seen the movie Hoosiers, the town I grew up in is that town. It's the next town over, actually. But it's still like that 60 years later. And I think that's hard for people to fathom. I was on the other side of that equation.
Yeah.
I never met a Black person until I was 18.
You're not the first person from Indiana that's told me that either.
This is Indiana, right? Like, and people are like, well, you should have exposed yourself to something more. And I was like, where? How? I was 12. And like, it's not like I was going to drive myself to the big city to...
And at 12, that's not your job.
You know?
That's your job is to, like me, grow up and really find yourself and to really, you know, shape your own point of view on in your own the way that you view the world.
Did you have a sense that you were different or that you lived a different experience growing up in high school? Mm-hmm. And what did that, and were you able to open up about that to people, or was it like a go along to get along? Because where I grew up in Indiana, it didn't matter what you felt. Mm-hmm. It was a go along to get along scenario. Mm-hmm. And so it was very much like be a part of the Absolutely. The milieu. So yeah. Like what not an Indiana word at all. Milieu. But like, what was it like growing up in that environment? Did you feel stifled? Did you sense something different? Did you, like, there's a construct around you?
Absolutely. Every day, every minute of every day, I felt different. Mostly, you know, just, I'm the odd one out usually, you know. What most would probably feel on the outside looking in, I had actually had a great experience in high school. I had a great experience and throughout my younger years, but I always felt different, mostly because, you know, I was the butt of a lot of jokes, a lot of really insensitive jokes. I know that we live in like a different time now, but, and back then, you know, things were a little bit more acceptable, I guess, not acceptable in you know,
things happened today, and people didn't stop them.
Right. People didn't stop them. They found them to be a part of everyday life. So, you know, different racial slurs or jokes or things like that. I was constantly feeling different. And, you know, I think we as humans, we have a defense mechanism. It's funny because I was doing a scene the other day. I was practicing a scene and I had to do a lot of emotional work for it. And like the emotions of like sadness, rage, all these different kinds of emotions, they're hard for me to break through because of everything I kind of went through as a child, because it was my defense mechanism. I taught myself, my body, you know, our bodies and our minds are really strong and intuitive. And I taught myself how to build up that wall so that I did not have to feel those negative emotions coming from, you know, jokes or anything like that.
I think that's the interesting part, that we, no pun intended and unrelated ways, we look at the world in a very black and white way.
Absolutely.
And it's difficult because people want to say, you said something interesting, which is like, I had a great high school experience, but I also had to go through these things. Like those two things can both be true.
Absolutely.
In today's world, a lot of people would say, oh, because you had to go through those things, it wasn't a great experience. It was awful and horrible. And those things are not good to go through. Those things mm-hmm. can feel awful and horrible, but those conflicting emotions can all exist at once.
Those things, the jokes, the all those negative experiences that I went through, all of that, like I said, all that molding and shaping from, you know, all these outside sources, those inadvertently made me who I am today. So I'm actually very grateful for it. You know, I think I don't go back and say, hey, I wish that, you know, this could have been this way, this could have been that way. All those experiences helped me to get to where I am. Honestly, if like I didn't have those negative experiences of, you know, feeling othered or, you know, not feeling super, super comfortable in my own skin, I wouldn't have had this breakthrough later on down the line where I just kind of shed all of that and I built it back up piece by piece. And now I can tell you exactly who I am, exactly what I don't like. This is the person that you see right now.
So, yeah. Well, that's amazing. I mm-hmm. think there are things that happen in life that are reckonings for some people, right? Mm-hmm. The social justice movements mm-hmm. of the summer of 2020 Absolutely. Being a moment for some people to pull out. Mm-hmm. And I had this moment where I asked my therapist, and I'm open about the fact that I have a therapist and everyone should have a therapist. Same here. And I agree. Everyone should. I was like, if you hurt your leg, you would have it set by a doctor. So,
exactly.
And I asked her and I said, is this a moment of reckoning? Mm-hmm. Is this a moment where people will be different afterwards? Mm-hmm. And she looked at me and she said, no. And I said, excuse me? Like this is a very prominent thing that's happening. Mm-hmm. It's everywhere. And she said, in order to do that, you have to do the work. Mm-hmm. And the work is long-term, consistent, and every day. And it's hard. And yeah. people aren't accustomed to doing the work. No. And so she said, give it 6 to 9 months and most everyone will be back to normal. And I will tell you, that bore true, right? Like the number of people who were aggressively posting every day, it just dwindled off Absolutely. Into nowhere. And people of all races, backgrounds, Absolutely. Economic, and that sort of thing. You had this experience in your early 20s mm-hmm. where you pulled up out of the weeds mm-hmm. and you did the work.
Yeah, yeah. So
how, where, what, like where did you just wake up one day and you read a book and you're like, hello, this is what I should be doing, right? Or was it like a revelation?
Because it was a little bit more of a slow pace for me, I think. It was more of a buildup, you know? So like I said, I went through all these experiences in high school and then I moved on to college. And college is where the Justin that you see again, he started to wake up a bit. Like I wasn't like very aware that I was changing. But that was the moment in time where I really saw diversity and I saw a variety of people. Still not a lot. I still went to school in Indiana, so, you know, still not a lot. But definitely more than what I was accustomed and used to. And I remember it was during my senior year, that's when this feeling started to hit for me that I wasn't being genuine with people. It was a weird feeling because it didn't feel like it was my fault. Like I didn't feel like I should blame myself for it, but I also felt weird just in my day-to-day interactions with people. I felt like I was putting on a show.
I was gonna say, like, does it feel like a little out of body? Like, now you're an actor, so we now we know where the early skills came from.
Yeah, and it felt like, you know, I was trying to be somebody else, if that makes sense. And when I graduated from college, so I remember I said, I'm just going to try it out. I'm going to try out therapy, you know, and I went to, she's like the small Jewish woman. And she, one of the first questions she asked me was just, who are you? She just asked me like, who are you? And not in this big, like introspective moment, you know, it was more so like, who are you? Like, what do you like? What do you like to eat? Like, what places do you like to go? Where do you want to travel? Things like that. And I couldn't answer a single question. I couldn't. And
what did that feel like?
It felt disappointing. It felt like
disappointing.
Absolutely. Because I'm thinking, you know, I've lived for 20 some odd years. I should know who I am by now. You know, I should know exactly what I like and what I don't like and, you know, where I want to go in life and who I want to be. And it was a wake up moment for me. It was a moment where I said, all right, I don't know who I am. Maybe I should figure it out. And it's not to say again that was the next morning. I was just like, I know who I am. And like, that's it. It, you know, it was a very slow process from there. And it felt like that moment of realization where I really, it almost felt like I got caught. Like I got caught in a lie almost.
So there's something to be said for that moment, because I want to get to what you did after that moment, but there's something to be said for you get caught. And let's go with that emotion. Mm-hmm. Like when people get caught, a lot of people, when they get caught in something, back away from it.
Yeah.
They don't want to be confronted by it. Mm-hmm. What do you think made you confront it? And what do you think, is it fear that keeps people away from it? Mm-hmm. Is it like, were you scared? Like, you know, there was a disappointment element, but what made you say, all right, I'm going to lean into the hurricane here?
Mm-hmm. I feel like I had no choice almost, because when I felt like I got caught per se, I immediately like wanted to just leave the office. Right. I was like, I don't feel comfortable anymore, but it kept ringing in my mind and through my ears, like her same question, like, who are you? Like, what do you like? What do you
know? Oh, I can just picture you like lying awake at night with like the words circling above your head, and you're being like, what is happening?
It was a very dramatic thing. You know, there was like a little circle of like,
every time you walked into your bedroom, like a music cue was playing and it was your roommate being like, just helping.
Exactly. I genuinely felt like I gotten caught. So like you said, some people kind of run away from that. And I don't know what it was. I think it might've been just my intuition. And, you know, I'm extremely spiritual and, you know, I'm a Christian. So, I think I call it God, that energy that spoke to me, that told me, you know, it's time to wake up. Like I said, throughout college, I felt something waking up. I just didn't know what it was. And to me, that was just me shedding all these different ideas about, you know, who I thought I was. And I didn't even know I was starting to shed them. And then it all just kind of came to a point when she asked me who I was.
Well, I mean, that's an amazing moment. And I personally love the spiritual aspect of it. As you know, I'm deeply spiritual. Mm-hmm. I call myself an Episcopal Taoist, Catholic for gays. It's a new brand I'm putting for Episcopalianism.
I mean, I like it.
It's Catholic for gays.
I think you should go with it.
Yeah. I'll let the church know. But there's the Bible is filled with stories of people who had someone speak to them in that vein, right? Like, and not someone, but like where they a light, it's all like turning on a light. Yeah. But you also have to embrace it, right? Mm-hmm. You also have to say, all right, I'm willing to listen to whatever voice, if it's your God, your spirit, your whatever that is inside of you. Mm-hmm. You have to be willing to like quiet the world down and try to hear the whispers.
Absolutely. And it's hard work. It's a lot of hard work. And I feel like that's usually why people decide to back away from it. I think as human beings, we naturally want to lay in comfort. Like we want to just bask in it because life's already hard.
Life's hard. Why make it harder by trying to question why you exist?
Right. Like, and I mean, come on. And that's a hard question to ask. That's a hard question to ask yourself. So I think that like people just inherently, they just kind of want to just float on by. That's not a negative thing. That's not a bad thing. It's a human thing. Mm-hmm. That's just what it is. Some people, the select few, who were not given the opportunity to just kind of step into their purpose early on and figure out.
Bless those people.
Yeah. And you brought up Beyonce. You know, I don't love Beyonce as a person because I don't know her personally, but I love the fact that when she's up on stage or when you see her in a music video or whatever, even when you hear a song, you understand that that is her purpose in life and that she was surrounded more than likely by people who championed that her entire life. That's why she's so successful and she's still young, you know? So it's a lot of work for people to do. And I'm glad that I had that moment for myself and I'm glad that I decided to step into it.
So for somebody who is listening, who would say they've encountered that moment, what would you tell them? Like if they're at the crossroads of running away or leaning into it, is there advice that you would give them? Like, how would you comfort them in a way that they would be willing to lean into it?
Absolutely. First of all, I wake up every day and I ask myself, how do I meet God halfway? Right. So I feel like, again, you can use any higher power for this. So like if you are non-religious, you can just say, hey, how do I meet the universe halfway? Meaning that if I'm asking for something, what's my end of the bargain?
Okay.
You know? So when I wake up and I ask myself that, and I started to ask myself that way back when, you know, I was asking myself who I am, I had to do the work on my own. And I would advise anybody to just do the work, just kind of break yourself down, identify things that don't make you feel comfortable about yourself per se, not necessarily insecurities, because those most of the time aren't our fault, but just break down the parts of you that make you feel like you might be lying to somebody. Like those, like I said, like I felt like I was not being genuine with people about like who I was. I felt like I was putting on a show. And those parts of myself that I felt like I was putting on a show, I immediately identified. I felt like I was being a little bit over the top with people just to get them to like me. And I felt like I was saying all the right things and not addressing things that were bothering me and things like that made me feel like I was telling that lie. I would say identify those first and then ask yourself if it's something that you're willing to change, which hopefully it is. And then immediately just try to, you know, every day and every encounter, try and counterbalance that.
So let's take that example, right? Like you're somebody and people are constantly commenting on some aspect of your personality or something and you let it slide. You just, you're like, you know what? It is what it is. And then you realize you have this feeling that this isn't I'm frustrated by this. Yeah. I'm upset. And so the next time it happens is like, you just call them out? Do you pull them aside? Do you say, listen, that actually makes me uncomfortable? Like,
no. And you know, for an example, like if somebody were to like call something out about my personality, like way back when, and, you know, say like, oh my God, you're so over the top. And like, and it doesn't have to be like a negative thing either. It could have been a compliment. And this is probably why I don't like compliments to this day. I get very uncomfortable. Yeah. But it could have been like a compliment like that for them, but I would, you know, I wouldn't, it wasn't about them. Like I would take that back and I would say, all right, how do I show myself to these people without a, like, I don't want to seem like I'm sad or upset or, you know, that like, I don't want to be here, but I also don't want to be like over the top and, you know, doing the most just for no reason. And that's not an easy thing to do, but it's something that you can accomplish, and it's not something that you have to ask somebody for permission to do. Like, I wouldn't bring that back and be like, hey, like,
well, that's a really important point. Like, in today's debate, we talk a lot about emotional health and wellness, and I think people get confused about where responsibility lies in emotional wellness, right? Like, and there's, for some people, like there are interactions with other people and there's conflict with other people and working through that conflict and having a conversation. But there's a lot that that relies on the choices. Like the only thing you can control is you, right?
Absolutely.
And that's a really interesting perspective on this, which is you had this realization. It wasn't about telling other people, please don't do this. Although there's certainly a time and a place to do that.
Absolutely.
It was about you representing who you truly wanted to be.
Yeah.
Which
is not even like who I wanted to be, just who I am. And like, we all have these, we inherently know, again, what we like, what we don't like, where we want to go in life. And it was it's no mystery that, like, to me at least, that like, after I asked myself that question, after I did that work, is when I decided to move to Los Angeles. It's when
I did. You make a list of things you wanted to change about you?
I journal a lot, so probably there's a couple lists probably in the journal.
Okay.
But I did have a couple things that I knew that I wanted to accomplish. I knew that I wasn't happy in my life. And so once I kind of, you know, identified like those different personality quirks that I felt I was being disingenuous, I identified where I wanted to go in life. And I knew that I'd always known that I wanted to move to Los Angeles, at least to try it out, you know.
Okay.
I have a love-hate relationship with this town, but, you know.
Yeah, I mean, wearing a Dodgers cap.
But, you know, I still support. So, and honestly, I credit Los Angeles with bringing me fully into myself. It wasn't until I got here, and I knew a few people from college and, you know, just around town, but for the first time in my life, I was in a space where I didn't know a lot of people. Therefore, I didn't have people who thought they knew who I was molding me or continuing to shape me and keep me in this box. And when I got here, that's when I really came out of my box, really.
Well, I remember in the town mm-hmm. that I grew up in, you know, we started my freshman year with 274 students mm-hmm. and we finished with almost just like 100. So like a lot of people yeah. never graduated high school. And all anyone could talk about was how they were going to leave Greensburg. They were going mm-hmm. to leave Greensburg. And I thought to myself, this is how small towns die. Mm-hmm. Whole generations leave. And then 10 years later,
they're still there.
They're still there. They're still, you know, the punchline. Yeah. 10 years later, they're still there. And I started to think about it. And I realized that a whole lot of people left and came back because they went someplace new. And for the first time, they weren't Bob's son or Sally's daughter. There wasn't an instant recognition with people around them. Like when you met somebody, they'd be like, oh, I know Bob. You're great because you're his son, whatever else. When you go to a new city and it's an entirely new crowd, they're like, who the hell is Bob? Who were you?
Exactly.
Right? Like, and that's, you have to almost sell yourself.
Yeah.
And I guess in that vein, you really had to sell yourself because you had to simultaneously represent yourself and then also be that person around other people.
I was in the process.
Terrifying prospect.
Absolutely. I was in the process of building myself back up. So it was almost like, how do I want to represent myself? And again, I had to stop myself and say, like, it's not about who I want to portray to others, because that's what I was doing before. It's about, all right, let me just settle in with myself and try to get comfortable with just who I am as a person. Just know, you know, you can put good energy towards people, but just know none of that, none of the performative energy that a lot of us give, especially when we first meet people. Okay. I just wanted to be myself. And that, again, that I credit that moment in time with me moving and that transition and meeting people like you, meeting people for the first time that didn't know who I was, and allowing them to figure it out for themselves instead of, like, you know, automatically thinking that they know something about me.
Well, I think that's the most incredible part is I have loved getting to know this version of Justin. Yeah. I love who you are, who you are becoming. You might be uncomfortable with compliments, but I think it's an amazing person. But I think it's also really important for people to realize that it's not about being an Instagram influencer. It's not about being famous. It's not about being some version of yourself. It's Kelly Clarkson. I'm not here for your entertainment. Mm. It's really profound for people to understand that I think everyday people go through these things and can go through these things and come out happier on it.
And you might have noticed, I feel like lately there has been kind of like this little mini revolution against, you know, influencer culture, right? So against, you know, kind of like this white, cisgender, heterosexual male, you know, being online and, you know, living a happy life. People, especially now that we've been in this thing for a year, now that we've been at home, and again, you know, the pandemic, a terrible thing, you know, terrible thing. But at the same time, it has helped a few people just be by themselves. And again, they had to ask the question, like, who am I? What I like? And now people are starting to reject the idea of this happy-go-lucky life that we all kind of either thought that we had or that we aspired to. And influencer culture goes along with that. That's why, you know, I just rejected this. And thank you all for posting your black squares on Instagram. We as the black community really appreciate it. But what else? And people were asking, what else? What more can you do? What action can you take? And I think that people are rejecting this kind of, I'm just going to give you this, like, a little bit of myself and that's it. No, I want to hear your words. I want to hear what you think. I want to hear what you have to say, and I want to see what you have to do. And I think it's a good thing. I think that, you know, I think that that's how you step into more of a purposeful life to me.
I think that's incredible. I think what you've done is incredible. I think just being yourself and the work to be part of yourself. Mm. So I'm hopeful that it will inspire more people to do that. Perhaps somebody living in Indiana. And I want to thank you for joining me today.
Thank
you for tuning into The World According to Craig on this week's episode. We learned what all of that work really is from somebody who's done it. And hopefully, if you want to learn more about it, tune in next week. And in the meantime, thank you so much for joining this week and for sharing your story. I'm so grateful.
Of course. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for tuning in to The World According to Craig. When I started this podcast, I didn't know what I was doing, and I still don't. But now I have the stories of a lot of incredible people who do know what they're doing. And for that, I'm truly grateful. I hope you tune in every week for more stories just like this one.